if you're looking for a reference on do not despise the day of small things, you'd need to go to Zechariah 4:10, but that's not part of the sermon. But here's what is part of the sermon. We talked about Jacob. What I read this morning was in Genesis chapter 28, and it's 10 through 15. And what happened at that point, Jacob, whose brother Esau, he had got into it. Jacob's name means subplanter or grabber, weasel, con man, you know, something like that in today's vernacular. He was going for it. He was trying to move himself up. And he got himself in enough trouble that even his dad and his mom agreed that the best thing that he could do was leave the country and leave where they were in Beersheba, and he should go north to Haran, where the rest of the family was living up north in what we would call modern-day Iraq. But up there, he should go up there basically to save his life because his twin brother was getting ready to kill him. So on the way up, by the way, that was a 48-mile walk from Beersheba, where he started, to the place that he laid down to go to sleep. 48 miles in one day. I did 14 one afternoon and thought I was going to die. I don't know how he... But I could have done it if I was running, because I'd been just like Chuck, just a well-oiled machine and ran all the way. But 48 miles is how far he walked that day. When he laid down, he did have the dream, and he saw a ladder extending from the earth all the way up into heaven. And there was the Lord Himself standing at the top of the ladder, and the angels were descending and ascending up and down this ladder. So they were coming from God, communicating to men, and going back up to God. They were doing whatever God told them to do, the jobs they asked. And this ladder is in contrast with, and I never considered this before, this ladder is actually in contrast with something else that had happened earlier in the book of Genesis. Jacob's ladder, he had the dream, is a spiritual thing. Jacob's ladder is something that is provided by God, and the holy angels of God were ascending and descending. It was a pathway for angels to go to God or to come down from God to us. It's something very spiritual, and actually it is a symbol of Jesus Christ, because Jesus was human. And yet, while he was on earth, he had a clear access all the way up to the very throne of God, where, you know, God the Father was. This spiritual ladder of Jacob's was in contrast to the Tower of Babel. And I had never saw this before, but somebody pointed out that Jacob's ladder was something spiritual created by God and shown to man to have access, so that man could have access to a holy God through intercession and through the holy angels, which angels as messengers, so that they could have access through the messengers of God to the presence of God. Where the Tower of Babel was physical, it was man-made, and it was useless. No matter how high they built that ladder, it was, or that tower, it was never actually going to reach into the heaven where God dwelt, where they could assault the throne of God and try to take over up there. And so the two were in contrast to each other. And it's always, God's is spiritual, it's superior, and man was trying to do something he really didn't understand. He thought, well, if I can build that tower, I'll be able to reach up to the heavens, just like Satan thought he could overthrow God. But now Jacob was on the lam, as they say. He was trying to run away, get away from his brother. He didn't know what was going on. He was alone. He gets out there by himself. He lays that rock down for a pillow. He goes to sleep on it. And you'll notice that what I read earlier, God had made all sorts of promises to him that he would be with him. He would take him up there. He would bring him back. And once he got back into the land, that his seed would honestly take over everything from the north to the south to the west to the east. His children would spread out over the whole country, that his people would end up being the people that would occupy what we would later know through Moses as the land of Canaan. And God said, this is what's going to happen, and I give it to you. And he gave him also the promises that he had promised Abraham and he had promised Isaac. Now, the reason this is so important, and the reason this is important, is because if you remember this story, Jacob and Isaac were twins. And even before they were born, God said, Jacob I've loved, and Esau I've hated. Jacob and Esau were the twins. And God said, Jacob I've loved, and Esau I've hated. And this is before they actually had done anything. So what was it about Jacob that God was more enamored with him than his brother over here? And you have the story where Esau, who was a man's man, manly man, went out hunting, fishing, was always out in the woods, riding the camels, hunting, whatever they did back then, whatever it is, hunting for at that point. He was out there doing this kind of stuff, where it said Esau was in the tents all the time. He was hanging out, listening to the stuff that was going on, learning, maybe learning to read, write, and all that stuff. But he was there in the tent, paying attention to the people and what was going on, and he figured this out. This is what God saw in Jacob and why he cared about Jacob. He saw that Jacob understood that there was something very valuable, and it was the promises and the presence of God in a person's life. He knew God had blessed his grandfather Abraham, and that he had promised Abraham that he would have this particular area, and God had multiplied him. And if he had that favor of God, then things would break his way all the time. He also knew that if he had the birthright, that he was entitled to two portions. Because the rule was, whoever had the birthright would get two portions of whatever. So if you had 10 kids, you'd divide it by 11, and the oldest would get two portions instead of just one. Everybody else got one portion. So he was shrewd enough to think, I need a double portion because I want as much as I can get out of this life, but I also need the blessing and the favor of God. So it comes down, Esau comes in, he's hungry one day, his brother's over there cooking what we would call red beans. He's cooking red beans, something like that, maybe chowder. I really don't know what was all in that soup. It's kind of a mystery, like noble chowder. What's really in that soup? And he was there cooking. His brother comes along, and he did not value the things of God. He didn't really care about the future. He cared about the moment. He said, I'm hungry. I'm going to die if I don't get something to eat. And his brother said, I'll tell you what. You sell me your birthright, and I'll give you all the beans you want. He said, I'll do that. So Jacob got the birthright. He was promised a double portion from then on of his father's inheritance. So he had half of what he was going for, but remember, he was a grabber and a hustler. As a matter of fact, after God had told him that he was going to receive all these blessings, including the land, and he was going to be brought back, listen to what Jacob adds on to this after God had made the promise. Jacob said, and this is in verse 20, and Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go. And then he adds this on. This is not something God had said in the original promise. And will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come back again to my father's house in peace. Then shall the Lord be my God. He goes on to say that he will tithe, and that he will make that rock the cornerstone of the house of God, and the name becomes Bethel, house of God. El means God, Beth means house. House of God. So even during this time here, he was always pushing, trying to get just a little bit more. What do you want? Just a little bit more. He was always hustling. And God saw this man as a man who understood spiritual things and the value of the presence of God in his life. Where Esau didn't really particularly care about much of anything except what he could grab a hold of, what he could eat, the wind in his hair and the bows and the arrows and people cheering him on because he was so great. But he goes, and it says that he went alone. So he had days to travel all the way up to eventually what became his father-in-law. And he turned out that his father-in-law was just as big a crook as he was. His father-in-law tried to beat him out of stuff every step of the way the whole time he was there. And Jacob finally threw up his hands and said, that's it, I'm going home. That was 32 years later, they calculate, that he decided he was going to head back. And about chapter 32, verses 1 and 2, this is what happened. And Jacob went on his way. The angels of God came to him. And when Jacob saw them, he said this is God's host. And he called the name of the place Mahanaim. So on his way home, after 32 years up there in Haran with his father-in-law, who was always trying to get the better of Jacob, and Jacob was always getting the better of him. So this was just going back and forth. He finally says, that's it, I'm going home. And he heads south, and he's going to go back to where his folks are. And on the way home, he starts going, you know, when I left, my brother was going to kill me, and I really don't know if he's going to kill me or not, because the last thing I did to my brother was trick him not only out of his birthright, but out of the blessing that God had in store, which should have went to him, but I beat him out of that too. He said, I'm on my way back, and I'm going to meet my brother. And on the way returning home, in I believe 21 through 24 of chapter 32, it said, so went the presence over before him, and he himself lodged in the company. And he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford of Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And there he wrestled with a man until the breaking of day. Now, what happened is he gets there to this place. He picked out some of the top animals of his flocks. He sent them ahead because he knew there was 400 trained warriors of his brother coming down toward him. He doesn't know whether his brother's going to come and kill him or not. So he picks out a bunch of the prized animals. He sends them north and says, take these, give them to my brother. And then he sends flock after flock after flock. And then he starts sending his servants, his maid servants, his men servants. He sends his bodyguard. Finally, late at night, he even sends the rest of his family. And he says, you just keep on going and walk that way because my brother's there and he's coming. And it says, he was left alone. Now, he's left alone and he's not loved and he doesn't know what's going on other than the fact that during that time, we know that God shows up. Would you hold that in your back, hold that in your mind, that he was alone and he was in trouble, and that trouble was of his own making. Now, if you'll give me a little bit of chance, Jonah, and if you happen to have one of these Bibles in front of you, you can look and see that Jonah is on page 678, which is so much faster than me digging around trying to find it. Jonah, which is a little bit of a book, only four chapters. Jonah, God's called that man, and he said, hey, I want you to go for me, in my name, to the city of Nineveh. They've been bad, and I want to correct them. So I want you to go up there. And Jonah said, ain't no way I'm going up there. I don't like those people. Those people don't like me. And you want me to go up there and try to straighten them out? It's just me? No way. He jumps in a boat. We all know he heads out. He's going across the sea. And then the storms all happen. And they say, what's going on here? And Jonah fesses up and says, it's my fault, guys. I ran away from God. So they pitch him in the water. And we know what happens. But while he's in the water, a big fish that God had prepared came along and swallowed him. So God had prepared this ahead of time, and he got swallowed by the fish. And while he's in there, he starts praying. Actually, it says, verse 1, chapter 2, then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly. And in verse 2, listen to what he said. And I said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou hearest my voice. So he's in the belly of the well, and he feels like he's in hell. And he says, but I cried to God. And in verse 3, listen to what he says. For thou hast cast me into the deep, into the midst of the sea, and the floods compassed about me, and all thy billows and all thy waves passed over me. So he says, I'm down at the bottom of this ocean. I'm in fish, and I'm crying out to you. Verse 4, then I said, I am cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward the holy temple. So he knows all this stuff's going on, and he's been cast out of the sight of God. He feels like he's in the lowest place you can get, which is hell. And he says, yet I know that I will look again on the holy temple of God. So there he was at the bottom of the ocean, in the belly of a whale. He felt like he was in hell. And yet when he was down there, he still said, I know that you're going to hear me. He says, I know that I will see thy temple again. And it's just like the psalm that David had written in Psalm 139, verse 8, and I've got it written down. It says, if I go to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. Jonah realizes that God is always there for him. Jacob realized that even in his loneliest times, when he was by himself, God was there. You even have Joseph. He got thrown into a lot of trouble, and he was at the bottom of the pile, standing at a slave auction, stripped down so everybody could see if he had any physical defects or leprosy or skin problems or teeth problems, and they was bidding on him, and yet it says that he was prospered by God. He was still God's chosen man. And that wasn't his fault. Yeah, Jacob, you brought that on yourself. You hoodwinked your brother. You beat him out of his blessing, and you bought that birthright for a bowl of beans. You're a shrewd man, but when push came to shove, you sent everything away. It was all gone, and you knew it was worthless because you were standing in a position where your brother could be coming to kill you, and all your animals, all your wealth, everything else was totally useless to you at this point. It was just you and yourself, and oh my gosh, what's going to happen to me? And God shows up. You got Jonah, his problem. He's the one that ran from God, and he gets pitched into the ocean, and he gets swallowed by the fish, and he's at the lowest physical place on the earth that he can imagine. At the bottom of an ocean, he feels like he's in hell, and he starts praying to his God. Joseph is standing there at the lowest portion of a social order. He's going to be a slave. We know that he's going to be bought by Potiphar. He's going to be falsely accused. He's going to be thrown into a prison. And he's going to stay in that prison for quite some time. Not his problem. He didn't cause it. But he ended up at the low end of the social spectrum. I said all that to say this. It doesn't matter at what point in your life that you get down to the bottom of your life. You'll get there and you'll end up and realize you have nothing. You are alone. There you are. All your wealth does you no good. Nothing. Won't buy you another minute. Your brother could be coming to kill you. It'll not buy you another minute. You could be standing there like Joseph's going, it's not my fault I didn't do this. They grabbed me, they threw me in a well, they sold me off to the Midianites, they sold me off to the Egyptians, and here I am. Doesn't matter. You could be Jonah. Shouldn't have gone. And yet he ended up on that boat. It's not the best place to be. But I'm wanting to give, you know, what's this all mean to us? And here's the idea behind all this. God does not leave us because we are at the bottom of our life. That we have hit rock bottom and nothing avails us. We can lose it all. And it doesn't matter whether it's our fault we lost it all or whether it's somebody else's fault that we lost everything, but it's gone and there's nothing there but God. Even if it's our fault, God is still there for us. He will always be there, whether it's our making or not. And that's the important thing. He is still there, even if it's my fault. He is still there. He still hears my prayers. And he still answers and says, I will lift you up. At the lowest point in our lives, he will lift us up. And why is that? Because he's made us a promise. Romans chapter 11, verse 29. For the gifts and the callings of God are without repentance, is how it's said in King James. For the gifts and the callings of God are irrevocable. Is other translations. It means once God's called you, He's called you. He does not let you go. He makes sure that you accomplish what's supposed to be accomplished in your life, and you will do what you will do. And even though you're sitting down here in a very miserable place at the bottom of the pile, and you have no place to go, you can still say, I've got a calling on my life, and my God will hear me. My God will hear me. Well, how's that? Because you are all called. Each and every person who has said, I accept Jesus Christ as my personal Savior, you're called. You're called to be His kid. Therefore, He will always hear your prayer. And even though you're alone and it's your own fault that you're down there on the bottom, He says, I still love you, I'll care for you, and I will lift you up. You pray to me, you talk to me, and we will get this worked out together. Now, this all has worked for Jacob, it's worked for Joseph, it's also worked for Jonah, and it will work for us. There's only one person that this did not work for, and his name is Jesus. When he got down to the very bottom, he was forsaken by his friends, he was forsaken by his family. The people who should have been on his side turned against him. The priest and all these people went against him. He was forsaken. He had absolutely nothing. They beat him up. They nailed him to a cross. Even then, he's at the bottom. And he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? All these other people never got forsaken. But he was there at the bottom. And he said, why have you forsaken me? And I'll tell you why. Is because he suffered the forsaking so that we would never suffer it. It said that he gave up all his wealth in heaven so that we could enjoy the wealth of heaven, that he could give it to us. Everything that he went through and everything he gave it up for us so that we could enjoy the benefits of it. He says, I'm giving this up. And when I hit the bottom of the ladder and the bottom of the rung and I'm down there where it's totally miserable and it's just me and I call out to God, my God will not even listen to me. He will turn his back on me because he said, I will never leave nor forsake you. I am forsaken so that you will never be forsaken. He experienced all the bad things that could have and should have come upon us. And yet, we are never forsaken. So if you're in a position right now and you feel like I'm at the bottom, it's a good place to be. Pray and ask God. Whether you feel it or not, He hears your prayers. Just say, it's my fault and I'm here. Or you can say, it's not my fault, but I'm here. And He'll say, I will help you. I will lift you back up. Just be patient and let me walk you through it this time so that you will get back up. And it's so that we know it's not us. Jacob had to go through all that scheming, conniving, and then send it all away. Because he needed to know it's only God that will lift him up. It's the promises of God that God will keep that would bring the true blessings he needs. Finally, when he does meet his brother Esau, who's riding down with all those men, and he's going, he could kill me right now. The wrestling match with God's over with. The prayer meeting with God's over with. He's standing there. And he's basically saying, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm here. God and me are together. No matter what happens, it's going to be all right because God is with me. And the guy comes up and he says, what's all this stuff? He said, that up there I gave you as a gift. He goes, I don't need it. He goes, that's okay. It's a gift. Take it. His brother said, I don't need it. I've got enough. And Jacob looks at him, and if you read it in the original, he says, take it. You have enough. I have everything. Take it. And that's the way we're to look at it. We have God in our life. We have everything. Everything to look forward to. And we are given a future. Right now, we're going to serve the Lord's Supper. And I want us to remember whenever we're taking that, that it is Jesus who was forsaken so that we would not be forsaken. It was Jesus that gave up His life that we could have life. And we could have it more abundantly. He gave up His health. He gave up His wealth. And He gave up guidance from God so that we could experience all of that. And we are to remember that. As we do this, we are to remember everything that He has provided for us.